It is my great honor and pleasure to be with all of you this evening. Thank you very much. Special gratitude to Her Grace Niti Devi, who has invited us to the Devi Music and Art School, opening the doors of your beautiful institute for all of us. My very special gratitude to one of the foremost yoga teachers of our time, who has one of the most influential yoga studios in New York City and all the world. She is gracing us with her presence, Her Grace Srimati Sharon Gannon. And my gratitude to Navina Nirda Prabhu and Krishnanandaji and Gopal Prabhu and Gaur Sundarji and all the sadhus who have come from various parts of the planet. And His Holiness Dayananda Swami Maharaj is humbly sitting in the corner, coming all the way from England. And very special gratitude to each and every one of you. I was asked to speak on the subject of the yoga of love. Love is the most profound human experience. It can give the greatest joy or the greatest misery. There's a beautiful analogy of a deer that especially resides in the Himalayan forests. And this particular deer has a gland that releases an intoxicating fragrance. The fragrance is called musk. The excretions of that gland, human beings consider it so valuable. It costs, just for a kilo, it costs thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. So this musk deer smells the fragrance and is so attracted to it, like nothing else. Nothing else could really attract it more than this fragrance, and he wants to find it. So he travels everywhere, and he always thinks he's so close. Crosses rivers, crosses forests, goes through the thorniest bushes and gets all cut up. His whole life he spends looking for that fragrance, and ultimately dies without understanding the fragrance is within himself. He's looking for it everywhere else except for where it is. So similarly, the Brahma Sutra, it tells us anandamayo vyashat. The one quality that everyone has in common, regardless of our race or our color or our sex or our religion or no religion, regardless of our species, everyone is looking for pleasure. And everyone wants to avoid what interrupts pleasure. That is called pain. Things could give some pleasure to the mind and to the bodily senses. But things can never give pleasure to the heart. Only love can give pleasure to the heart. to receive love and to give love. And what is the origin of that love? According to all the great scriptures of the world and the great saints, it's a universal truth. Satchit Ananda is the nature of the soul. Who we really are is an eternal part of God. We are animating this body. We are seeing through the eyes and hearing through the ears and touching through the flesh. I am not this body. I am in this body. I am not this mind. I am in this mind. Unfortunately, when we think we are the body and we think we are the mind, then we're going to try to find our happiness through the body and the mind, through various things. But when we understand that we are the immortal spirit, the Atma, or the Jiva, when we attain Jiva Mukti, when we're freed from the ego, the Ahankar, that has all these misconceptions, then we realize that what we're looking for is within ourselves. The Ananda aspect of Satchidananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of happiness, it's our capacity to love, our capacity to experience directly the infinite, limitless, timeless love of God or Bhagavan. That is a supreme love. It's everywhere. It's in everything. But somehow or other, we're not tuned in to the frequency of that love. We're tuned into many other distractions like greed or selfishness or anger, people envy, or just trying to find happiness through temporary situations. Cultured society loves people and uses things. A distracted society loves things and uses people to get them or to keep them. There's no fulfillment in such a life. We were speaking last night about a simple banana leaf seller who was really poor by material standards. And he was questioned, why don't you make a solution to your poverty? And he said, in my life, I have watched the world very carefully. And I have seen there is a king who sits on a beautiful throne and wears the most luxurious garments and ornaments, and crown, has a wonderful palace, eats the best food. And then there's the bird. The bird lives a little nest of straw. And the bird wears the same feathers every day. He doesn't have a wardrobe. And the bird just eats whatever little berries he finds in the trees. But in the passing of time, he said, I've seen they're both experiencing pleasure and they're both experiencing pain, happiness and distress, honor and dishonor. I don't really see much of a difference between the two. Unless we find the happiness that is actually within ourselves, there's no sustainable happiness. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam. The nature of this world is everything comes and goes by the power of time. Padam padam yad vipadam nadesham. And there's danger at every step. Just the day before yesterday, we drove to Dev Prayag with a group of wonderful people from various parts of the world. I didn't tell them that just 3 days before that, a bus was going to Dev Prayag and fell off the cliff and 11 people died. They were just going to take the same path we were going to. But somehow or other, it wasn't an intention. It's the nature of the world. One little mosquito bites you, and it could be the end of your life. But there's nothing negative about that. It's actually very auspicious. Because if we take this seriously, what the situation is of the nature of the fleeting uncertainties of material existence, then it can wake us up to question, is there something more than this? When I was a young teenager in the 1960s, I was part of the counterculture or the hippie movement. And everyone greeted each other with the sign, and we'd say, peace, brother, or peace, sister. Did any of you ever do that? That was our greeting, peace. But there was a war going on in Vietnam, and there was all kinds of tragedies going on in Africa and genocides. And even the counterculture people that I was with, if we were peaceful as long as things were going the way we planned them, but if there was some difficulty, we were fighting each other too. Where is peace? And I came to the conclusion, unless we find it within ourselves, we cannot find it anywhere. Like that musk deer. The yoga of love is bhakti. It's a yoga practice that is especially directed at awakening the potential within the heart, the potential of the soul to love. And what I have personally observed after studying so many different spiritual paths, it's really the essence. Jesus told in the Bible, the first and great commandment is to love God with all your heart, mind, and soul. And if you love God with all your heart, mind, and soul, you'll naturally love your neighbor as yourself, because you'll understand everyone is our neighbor. Not only the people who look like us and talk like us and think like us. When we actually see things in relationship to the spirit and to the supreme object of our love, Bhagavan, then we will see all humanity as our neighbors, all animals, all birds, all insects. Mother Nature is our neighbor, with her rivers and her forests and her lakes and her oceans. And we will love our neighbor as ourself. We will learn to respect. In love, there is no inclination to exploit. In love, the only inclination is seva, to serve, to be a well-wisher. From a spiritual perspective, we realize the true purport that in giving we receive. In Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a very, very essential verse. There was a king who was cursed to die in 7 days. And he asked a 16-year-old sage named Sukadeva, In 7 days, I don't have time to study all the different scriptures all over the world and all the different philosophers. Tell me, what is the very essence of all religion, of all spirituality? And what is the foremost occupation for all humanity? And what is the duty of a person who's about to die? These three questions are asked. The answer was 18,000 verses. But one verse summarizes all of it. May I present it to you? Savaipung sang paro dharmo yato bhaktirat hokshaje ahoitaki apratihata yayatma suprasidati. The supreme dharma, the very essence of life. Dharma means occupation. Dharma means religion. Dharma means our goal. The supreme dharma is that which awakens divine love from our hearts, which actually uncovers the natural love of the soul that is our true potential. And with it awakens an incredible longing to serve, to be an instrument of love, to express that love. Ahoitaki hapratihata means in order for love to satisfy the soul, it must be unmotivated by any type of selfishness or arrogance. No egoism. And it must be uninterrupted by circumstances. Because it's easy to appear saintly and kind when it's a nice sunny day and everyone's nice to us and people are saying namaste. But real spiritual integrity, do we maintain our morals, our ethics, do we maintain our sadachar, our character of compassion and service, even in difficult times? Here on the bank of Mother Ganga, I'd like to quote a particular prayer that was recited by a lady who went through so many difficulties in life, incredible, unbelievable pains and challenges. And yet her character was revealed in this little prayer. Twayin me nanya vishaya matir madhupate sukrit. Ratim udvahatadada gangevo gam udanvati. Madhupate, it means my sweet Lord. My sweet Lord, as the river Ganges flows to the sea, uninterrupted by any disturbance that may come before her, let my love be forever drawn to you without being distracted or diverted to anything or anyone else. When you put water on the root of a tree, the water extends naturally to every part of the tree, the leaves and the branches and the flowers. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartate. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna tells, I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. Aham bija pradapita. I'm the father and the mother of every living being. When we awaken that love that is within our hearts, love for Krishna, who has many names, who has appeared in many ways throughout history, that love naturally, spontaneously flows to all living beings, to all species, to all nature. Because when we taste the sweetness of that love, we're not looking for happiness. We're looking for opportunities to share the happiness that we have. That is yoga. Bhakti yoga. So Queen Kunti is praying like this. Yes, I have had so many difficulties in my life. Vipada shantu shashashva tatra tatra jagatguru. The person who offered these prayers was the mother of the Pandavas. She had seen her beloved child killed. She had seen her children being cheated, being exploited. She was in situations where people were trying to burn them alive. Can you imagine a mother's heart in that situation? And it went on for years and years. And she offered Vipada Shantu Shashashwat. She said, Krishna, please let these calamities happen again and again. Because whenever they come, I have no one to turn to except you. And when I turn to you, I'm beyond birth and I'm beyond death. The river Ganges is always flowing to the sea. If there's a mountain in front of her, she'll find a way to flow around the mountain. If there's massive rocks that fall on her, she'll somehow or other flow over, under, or around those rocks. In whatever situation, true compassion, true love, is to really be a well-wisher. To never become envious, to never become condescending. And that's only possible when we realize that's who we are, that's what we are. And that gift, that wealth, it's our inheritance. It needs simply to be uncovered. Could I tell a little story? Sharon told me this story. And actually, I liked it so much that I put it in a book that I wrote that's coming out soon. Sharon and David were in Varanasi. And they happened to see a little dog that only had three legs. And it was somehow hobbling along. And it looked really like it was suffering. So they wanted to get some food for that dog. So they went to a little place and got some bread. But by the time they got the bread, that dog was gone. But so many other dogs were there. So they were given dogs bread, correct? Chapatis. Not bread, chapatis. Dogs really like chapatis. And for those of you who have fed dogs, has anybody here ever fed dogs chapatis in India? They're very enthusiastic. And there was a... And they're all trying to get first in front of all the others to get the chapatis, and they're fighting for the chapatis, and they give one a chapati, they just eat it, and then another one grabs, eating it, and they're fighting to get close. They, you know, what if they run out of chapatis? The dog doesn't want to be last in line. They're giving, and after all the dogs got their chapatis, they saw one particular dog, very humble and peaceful. He was standing off to the side, letting all the other dogs eat chapatis. And they felt for him. And Sharon went over to give him a chapati. And this particular dog very carefully held it in his mouth, but didn't eat it. And the dog kind of, with his eyes, looked at Sharon in a speaking thank you. He was just so grateful. You've given me this chapati. The other dogs didn't express gratitude. They just ate. But this dog didn't eat, just expressed gratitude. And then began to wander away down the street. So they were very charmed by this dog, and they followed. What's he going to do with my chapati? And after some time, was it under a cart or a shop?
Under a shop, sari shop.
It was underneath a sari shop. The dog went there, and Sharon and David followed and looked underneath that shop. And what they found was an unforgettable experience. There was that three-legged dog. She was a mother, and she had a tiny little puppy that she was protecting. And the dog that took the chapati was a male dog. Very carefully, without taking a single bite out, put the chapati in the mouth of the little puppy. And the little puppy and ate it. And the mother and the father dogs just looked so happy. Their eyes were glazed over with affection and joy, even though they may have been very hungry, just seeing the little puppy eat the whole chapati. You see that propensity to love is within everyone. How could we think that animals are just senseless beasts? I remember when I took care of cows for about 8 years. If a mother cow lost her calf, she would be crying for days. And you could hear in her voice, in her moo, you could hear the pain of her heart, and she was expressing it. And when a mother cow would see a healthy little calf that she just gave birth to, you could hear the joy. You could see it in her eyes. Wherever there's life, there's the search for pleasure, there's the search for love. The Gita tells Vidyavanaya Sampane Brahmani Kabhi Hastini Suni Chaiva Swapaki Cha Pandita Samadarshana. Real wisdom, it's not about getting a PhD or a master's degree. It's not about memorizing large quantities of data within your brain. Real knowledge, according to the Bhagavad Gita, is the ability to see every living being with equal vision. And that's not an artificial imposition on the mind. When we understand the nature of our true eternal spiritual self, we will see that that eternal spirit is within everyone. Every individual personal soul, in whatever situation they may be in, is of the same substance. A part of God, a child of God, seeking happiness just like me. It's a universal principle. In forgiving, we're forgiven. In giving, we receive. The lack of understanding these true divine principles is so much the root cause of the greed and the conflict and the prejudice and the hatred that we find in this world. And so much cruelty. At our Govardhan Eco Village, we have about 80 cows. But sometimes I see in India how much suffering donkeys have to endure. So I was thinking, we should try to enlighten people about how donkeys are people too, and they deserve respect. If we love Krishna, how could we not love donkeys? We have to love everyone. So we got these donkeys that were beaten. They were abused. They were abused and used. They had all kinds of scars on them. And they were forced to work. Really, overloading work. So when we got them, they were so afraid of people. You had to force them to do something. That's what they were. But we didn't force them. We just had them. And if you walked a step toward them, they would run about 50 steps away. So you know what we named them? Because usually people, they don't treat donkeys or asses with much respect. How many people have ever praised you by saying you're like a donkey or you're like an ass, right? Usually we criticize people or make fun of people like a donkey. So what about donkeys? How would you like to be someone who everyone in the world is insulting people by comparing them to you? So we named the two donkeys we got Kamala and Amboja, which are two Sanskrit words, which means a beautiful lotus flower. And we just treated them with respect. And now they're shining, beautiful, and they're smiling. And if a human being comes near, they'll just run up to you. And if you're not really careful, they'll start licking you out of affection. So why am I telling this story? That people in all species of life, they respond to love, they respond to affection, they're looking for pleasure. And there's one man who was living in a village, and he was really in total poverty, and he was completely destitute. because he had some sort of an abnormal hand, and he really couldn't do much work or anything. But he was a nice person. So we brought him in, and we put him in charge of all these different animals, and the animals love him wherever he goes. There's goats and sheep and donkeys and horses and cows that follow him around. And he just, and this one bird, it's like, did you see that bird? It's kind of like a little turkey or something. It's a special bird that loves to eat snakes. So they're nice to have around, actually. But this little bird follows this person around everywhere, along with these animals, because he just talks to them, and they do what he says. He calls their names, and they come running to him. Because, you see, he has abnormalities, and humans, they make fun of him, they ridicule him, they don't give any value to him. But the animals love him because they see he's a kind, he's a generous, he's a wonderful person. And there's a reciprocation there, and it's beautiful. And everyone in our community loves this person because they see his heart. There's a story I tell often that took place right close to here. May I tell you? It's in the book Journey Home that I wrote. I lived in the caves of Tatwala Baba for some time on the other side of Ganga. He was a yogi. And after I decided to continue my pilgrimage, I was heading north. I crossed the Lakshman Julan Bridge and started going up. And in those days, Rishikesh was so different than now, at least from what the eyes see. The spirit of Rishikesh is eternal. But in 1970, January, February of 71, there was only some really old ashrams with some yogis and sages and rishis. It was not a very commercial place. There was no tourism at that time. It was really for people who were coming for serious pilgrimage. So most of what you see here was just nothing but forest. So I decided I was going to walk to Badrinath. I didn't realize because it was winter, it was covered with snow, but I found that out later. But I started walking north for hours and hours through the forest all alone. And suddenly I came to a clearing. I was horrified. There in front of my eyes were the most desperate people I had ever seen in my life. They were homeless. They were just living on the dirt in the forest. Some wore rags, filthy rags. Some were practically naked because they just had no clothes. Most of them had no fingers or toes, and many had no nose. It was a leper colony. The people were afflicted with leprosy. I saw people sleeping on the ground. I saw, because it was cold. It was just the end of winter in the Himalayas. And I saw one person, somehow or other, he made a hole, a little bit of a hole in the ground, and he covered himself with dirt as a blanket. These people were so desperate. And they saw me. And because of my light skin, I'm a foreigner. I must be a rich man. Little did they know that I had not a single paisa. I had nothing. I was a little sadhu just roaming around looking for truth. And what a truth I found in them. They surrounded me, about 15 or 20 of them, in a tight circle. They would not let me move. They were screaming, "Bakshish, bakshish, bakshish, give me donation." And I looked in their eyes, their deformed faces, and some of them, their noses were gone, and they were screaming, "Give me money." They were sticking their hands in my face, and as they were saying, "Bakshish," almost all of them were spitting in my face. And I'm from the suburbs of Chicago. This was a culture shock. You know, I saw in movies Ben-Hur and all these where lepers are living in caves and they're not allowed to be with any other people because leprosy is contagious. And here I am, a penniless little sadhu, homeless, wandering through the forest. And I'm not only, they wouldn't let me go, not only were they pushing me and shoving me, but I was thinking, I'm going to get leprosy and I'm going to be here with them. So it was quite a trauma. I wish I could have given them millions of rupees, but I didn't have. And finally, after about 20 minutes, they searched me completely. And they saw that I had nothing. So they let me go. I walked about 3 steps, and I saw on my left side an old leper woman. She was laying on the ground. And she kind of got up in a semi-sitting position. Half of her hair was white and half of it was gone. She had no nose, just like a melted, deformed hole in her face. Her face was really deteriorating. She had no fingers, no toes. She was just wearing filthy rags. And she was just laying in the dirt. And then with her fingerless fingers, she offered pranams to me like this. And she looked at me with the eyes of a mother for her child. I could see in her glance that she felt great pity on me for what I just went through in the encounter with her people. She saw my trauma. She saw my shock. She saw my fear, and she felt for me. And I gazed in her eyes, and I really connected with her affection. And then she took one of her palms and held it out as a blessing, a motherly blessing. My heart melted. I walked up to her and I bowed down, and she put her diseased hand on top of my head. And my head was kind of bowed, and I heard her saying with such an emotional voice in the Hindi language, "May God bless you, my child. May God bless you, my child. May God bless you, my child." She said it, if I remember, 3 times. And I looked up at her. She was weeping. Tears were flowing down her deteriorated face. And she was smiling. She had no teeth, but she was smiling radiantly. And I could feel that she was experiencing the joy that every mother wants to experience, the joy of blessing her child. And perhaps it was decades that she never had that opportunity, living in the total desperation and destitute of that leprosy colony. You see, in those days, nobody cared about those lepers. They were left to suffer and die. Nobody wanted to bother with them. Can I tell you something? When I looked at her face, the smile of the joy that she was giving me a blessing, I was thinking, I have never seen anyone so beautiful in my entire life. Not the Hollywood actresses, not the models in New York. She was truly beautiful. Melted my heart. What was that beauty? It wasn't the beauty of her skin. It was the beauty of her heart. She was in such a destitute condition, but she cared about me. She wanted to bless me with God's grace, and she was experiencing limitless joy doing so. She was smiling and crying, saying, "May God bless you, my child. May God bless you, my child." And I started crying, just taking those blessings. I felt so close to God with her. And after the exchange, I went a little north here in the Himalayas, and I sat beside Mother Ganga. And I looked at her stream, and I was thinking, how much do I see of Mother Ganga? All I see is the surface. I just see the waves on the top and sometimes things floating by. I can't see what's underneath the surface. There's all these fish. There's a whole underwater plant life. So much water. And I was thinking, just like that lady, we have such a tendency just to judge people and even to judge circumstances by seeing what's on the surface. But what's underneath? On the surface, she was the ugliest, most diseased person I had ever seen in my life. But below the surface, she was a loving, caring, motherly soul who seemed to only want two things in her life: to give love and to find someone who would receive her love. That's all. It was 36 years later, I think, I came back to where that leprosy colony was. It wasn't there. I asked people where it was, and they told me that different charitable persons actually built a home for them. It's not far from here. It's the same one that's close to here. It's some kilometers down from the mountain of where it used to be. But I went in there. It's probably a couple minutes walk from where we're sitting. That was a reasonably nice house. And the lepers were getting food 3 times a day. And there was medicine and doctors that were coming to take care of them, and they had a place to sleep. And they had a roof over their heads. I didn't expect to see that old woman. And I didn't. But I remembered her. Before anyone cared anything about her, she cared for me. Selfless love touches us in the deepest place of our heart. Sacrifices of love is the most beautiful experiences of this world. Bhakti, the yoga of love, is uncovering the very essence of the nature of our souls, which is selfless love. When we find it within ourselves, we can directly perceive in every living being that the potential of that love is there. It simply needs to be awakened, uncovered. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna, who descended into this world with the Mahabhava, the love of Radha, to share that love, he composed especially 8 verses. And in one of his verses, which we chant every day, it begins, Cheto darpanam marjanam bhava mahatavagni nirvapanam. The mind is like a mirror. When you look in a mirror, what do you expect to see? You expect to see yourself. But if that mirror is neglected and covered with decades and decades of dust, dirt, and various types of pollutions, and it's caked with layers and layers and layers of that dirt, what do you see when you look in the mirror? You see dirt. And you think, that's me. Just see how I look so nice today. That's our situation. These upadis, we're identifying I'm young or I'm old or I'm black or I'm white or I'm red or I'm yellow or I'm brown or I'm male or I'm female or I'm from the east or the west or I'm a Hindu or a Muslim or a Jew or a Christian or a Jain or a Sikh or a Parsi or I'm a Buddhist or I'm an agnostic or I'm an atheist or I'm a human or I'm a dog or a cat or a cow or an elephant or insect. Why do we think that way? This is just because the mirror of our mind is covered by so many external attachments. It's called avidya. But when we clean the mirror of the mind, gradually, as it's being cleansed of greed, of selfish passion, kama, of envy, of arrogance, of anger, of illusion. When we clean our minds, clean our hearts from these things, then gradually we see who we really are. We're a part of God. We're a lover of God. We're the recipients of God's infinite love. The joy of seva, the joy of expressing that love, whether we're politicians or business or industrialists or engineers or farmers or teachers or yoga teachers or yoga students, or swamis. Whatever we do becomes a means by which we can express our love. Whatever we do is no longer that I need more power, I need more money, I need more fame, I need more positions, I need more sex, I need more entertainment, I need more intoxications. These tendencies are only there because of poverty within our heart. Because the mirror of our mind is just so covered, we can't see who we really are. Nam namakari bahuta nija sarva shaktis. Anandam buddhivardhanam pratipatam punam ritasvadhanam. This kirtan, this chanting of the holy names of the Lord, is a simple but most powerful way of cleansing the mirror of the mind and uncovering the incredible spiritual wealth that's forever ours. Awakening from us, from within, the joy, the ananda, the ecstasy that we are all seeking at all times, but just looking in the wrong places. And what is that anand? Prem. Prem anand. It's ecstatic love. The awakening of love for Krishna. And in bhakti, it's completely personal. To personally experience the infinite love of Sri Radha Krishna. The male and female aspects of the one supreme absolute lover. And to be an instrument of that love in this world. The next verse, Nam Namakari Bahuta Nija Sarva Shaktis, means, my dear Lord, you have made yourself completely present in your names, your beauty, your sweetness, your love, your power, your purificational nature. Everything is there within your name, your abode, your associates. And you have many names throughout history and many religions throughout the world. You have revealed many names, and in every one of these names you have invested your potencies. But unless we're humble, unless we're grateful, unless we love satsang, the association of enlightened people, unless we love seva, service, then when we chant your names, we can't really connect. It takes a long time. Ye yathamam prapadyante tam stitaiva bhajamyam. According to how we surrender, Bhagavad reciprocates. My beloved Guru, Srila Prabhupada, he gave us a very universal teaching. In the Bible, it is said, unless you become like this child, you cannot enter the kingdom of God. He's speaking about simplicity. To be childlike means simplicity. A simple faith, a simple trust in one's parents. I remember one time I was living in a temple. This is in America, in an ashram. And I'm a monk, so I never had girlfriends or anything like that. I renounced. If you read Journey Home, you'll understand. But one of my best friends, he was a married man, and he was a monk like me, but then he decided to get married, and then he had a baby, And I was a little girl. And when she was like about maybe 3 years old, I don't know, maybe 2 years, probably 2 years old, he was in a temple during kirtan, and he would do this all the time. And this little blonde-haired, blue-eyed girl, she was about... It was a marble floor we were standing on in a temple, and kirtan was going on, and he would throw his little daughter way, way, way up in the air. And I was thinking, my God, if he doesn't catch her, she's just gonna splatter on the marble floor. He was throwing her way, way up. And then he'd catch her. And then he'd throw her way, way up. And he'd catch her. And he did it over and over again. And the amazing thing is his daughter, when he'd throw her up, she was smiling and laughing. And her eyes were just glazing with joy. And I was horrified. What if he misses? She'll die for sure. And just throwing her, and he's smiling, and he's looking up at her, and she's way up there, and she's smiling and laughing, and he catches her. And I remember the words of Jesus: if you want to enter the kingdom of God, you must be like this child. And I was thinking, that's it. And I always wanted to know what that meant. She had such simple, complete faith in her father. She knew that it wasn't based on philosophy. It wasn't based on logic. It wasn't based on scriptural injunctions. It was just a natural faith and trust that my father loves me, and he'll be there, and he'll catch me. And even in the most actually dangerous situation for her, she was blissful. Simple faith. We need philosophy. We need logic. We need scriptures. We need saints just to help us to become simple again. Because we need a simple heart. When a little baby cries for its mother, the baby knows, if I cry loud, my mother will come. The baby has that faith. When we chant God's names, if we have that simple humility, it doesn't matter whether we're billionaires or millionaires or Olympic champions, we're helplessly dependent on the gifts of God at every moment. Nature, Bhumi Devi in Sanskrit, she's the feminine power of the of Bhagavan. There's the Shaktiman, the Shakti. In our tradition, there's Krishna and the motherly, feminine, compassionate nature of the Supreme Radha, Sitaram, Lakshmi Narayan, Shiva Parvati, within this creation. The earth is Bhumi Devi. Bhumi Devi is an expansion of Sri Radha within this material universe. She's our mother. Just like we have a body and we have a soul, and we're conscious of every aspect of the body. Yes? At the time of death, the body has no consciousness of anything. But when the soul's in the body, it's conscious. Bhumi is an expansion of the Shakti of our divine beloved. And the whole earth and all the natural resources is her body, and she's conscious of everything. It's something very personal. Exploiting, polluting the rivers, the lands, the ocean, the air, is simply not being conscious Not that we are completely depending on her, and even if we pollute her like anything, she just keeps giving and giving and giving. Without air, without sunlight, without rain, without food, it doesn't matter who we are. We cannot survive. We're like little babies. However old we get, however strong we get, however successful or wealthy we get, we're like little babies completely depending on our mother. That's the truth. To be honest is to accept it and to reciprocate with respect, with gratitude, with devotion, seva. We serve our mother. We don't exploit our mother. We're grateful to our mother. Mother Ganga, Mother Earth. When we chant these beautiful names of the Lord in kirtan, when we chant with this type of humility and gratitude, and understand that the powers of Maya, powers of illusion, are much greater than us. Daivi yeshu gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, material nature, or maya, it's more powerful than anyone. But if you just surrender to me, then by my grace you will pass beyond it. So in the bhakti tradition, when we chant the names of the Lord, we chant in this spirit of gratitude and humility and sincerity. And now we will have kirtan. Thank you very much.